Welcome to today's episode, and thank you all for tuning in. My name is Jared Rennie, and I am a certified consulting meteorologist working for the North Carolina Institute for Climate Studies in Asheville, North Carolina. Today, my guest is Dr. Kathy Dello. She's the state climatologist for North Carolina and also the director of the North Carolina State Climate Office. There's a lot of roles here. She's also the fifth permanent director of the State Climate Office and the first woman to hold this position in its 43-year history. Dr. Kathy Dello, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So how are you doing right now? It's been a pretty long week for you, it sounds like.
Yeah, so I'm brand new to North Carolina. I've been on the job for about 4 months, and I'm trying to get out and meet as many people as possible. So earlier this week, I was in Nag's Head on the Outer Banks, spent a night in Raleigh, and then came up here to visit you all.
How many miles did you drive this week?
It will be 100 when all is said and done. It will be 1,000 when all is said and done.
Wow, that's a lot of miles. So thank you so much again for taking the time to do this today.
Yeah, a lot of podcasts. So, you know, if you get this available for my drive back, I can listen to myself.
Yeah, we'll try and get this in post within like 20 minutes after we're done. So we are here at a place called The Collider. It's in downtown Asheville. They're focused on working towards climate resiliency and adaptation. There's a lot of different people and organizations that are here. They have some really awesome office space in downtown Asheville. They do co-work space, they do event space, they do some outreach events, and they have this fantastic podcast equipment that they're letting us use today. So I have to thank them for letting us use this. If you want more information about them, just go check them out at www.thecollider.org. And then also sitting to my left here is Tom Maycock of the North Carolina. He waved, so I don't know, you can't see this on the podcast, but he waved. He also works with me at the North Carolina Institute for Climate Studies. He's helping doing some of the audio stuff, so my thanks to Tom for setting this up this week. So,
thanks, Tom. Thanks, Collider.
Yeah, awesome. So talk to me a little bit about the State Climate Office. You know, what is it? My goal for this is, you know, getting the public's perception, because a lot of people don't realize that most states and territories in the United States have a state climate office, but they may not realize it. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, what the State Climate Office does in North Carolina?
Yeah, the North Carolina State Climate Office has been around for 43 years, as you mentioned, and we're located at NC State University in Raleigh. And that's partially by design. Many of the state climatologists are located at universities in their respective states, although some, like South Carolina, are at a state agency. And what we really are meant to do is be the weather and climate experts for our particular state. In my case, it's the Tar Heel State. And we do this through three mission areas: research, extension, and education. So we're conducting original research on the state of North Carolina and how the climate interacts with the people who are here, and our different sectors like agriculture, transportation, public health. We do outreach, so we're out talking with K-12 students, community members, resource managers on any sort of aspect of climate and climate change in North Carolina and the Southeast. And then we do extension. We partner with NC Cooperative Extension. They have agents in all 100 counties. I don't have staff in all 100 counties. And they're this really trusted resource that we can use our information to work with them to help people who are outside of the triangle think about weather and climate.
Awesome. So you are part of NC State University, correct?
That is accurate.
Go Wolfpack, I guess. So we our organizations are both through NC State, through different arms, but Kathy was just doing the Wolfpack sign. I actually don't know how to do it. I'm just doing, I don't know, AOK or whatever. So this is great for podcasts that people listen to. So I'm interested in some of your background almost before you came to North Carolina, because you did a lot of traveling this week, but you've also done a lot of traveling as part of your career. So you're originally from New York, is that correct?
Upstate New York or Western New York?
Western New York, okay. And you went to school at the University of Albany?
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you went there for meteorology, right?
Atmospheric science meteorology.
Okay. Yeah. So I do a lot of work with the American Meteorological Society. So we talk to students who are, you know, they want to be aspiring meteorologists. They want to do weather forecasting. And that's what I wanted to do too. But if you ask me today what the weather's going to be like tomorrow, my answer is I don't know. So I like to go backwards in time and do things more climatologically speaking. So I'm curious in people's sort of paths, because people assume that, you know, their path is linear, but it's not. It can go in many different directions. So I'm just interested, like, you started out in the atmospheric science program at University of Albany, but then how did you get to, you know, where you were in Oregon, and how did you switch over to things like climate policy, and then how did that lead to being the state climatologist? Like, I'm really interested in that backstory.
Yeah, so I also thought I wanted to be a weather forecaster, and then I did an internship with the National Weather Service, a fantastic organization, and realized it wasn't for me. I'm glad that other people do it, but I knew that I was more interested in thinking about the Earth holistically and how people interact with it. I got my master's in geography and focused on climate in New York, specifically because I wanted to move into thinking about climate change. I worked for a state agency in New York, did a number of things for them, but at that time, New York had started planning for sea level rise. So this was ahead of Hurricane Sandy, which is obviously a very impactful event. But New York was kind of out in the lead in thinking about climate adaptation, and it seems crazy that just over 10 years ago, a state had to be out in the lead in thinking about climate adaptation, but it's still fairly new and fairly recent. Since I'd lived in New York all my life, I had decided that it might be time to go elsewhere. I knew that the West Coast appealed to me, so there was a job opening in Corvallis, Oregon. And it was to be the first staff member of this newly formed Climate Change Research Institute that the state legislature had stood up. And I got the job, got in my car, drove 3,000 miles to the West Coast where I knew nobody. And Oregon's a really special place to me. I ended up spending 10 years there. I ended up getting my PhD there. And I got my PhD in part because I really love Oregon State University. I love the land-grant mission. I loved a lot of the people that I was working with. And one of the reasons I got a PhD was to better understand some of the work that I was participating in. So I did my PhD research in understanding barriers to climate adaptation in Oregon state agencies. You know, we have a state with a lot of political capital and social capital around climate change, but no matter what, it seemed like we kept planning and planning and planning and not implementing. So that was an interesting change for me. I mean, at my core, I am a climate scientist. That's where I feel most comfortable. If you hand me a copy of BAMS, I'm going to read that much easier than reading an article on public administration. But for me, it's really useful in my role now, but also better understanding some of the things that were frustrating me. Why do we keep planning for climate change and doing nothing?
Okay, excellent. So can you describe life in, you know, talk about life in Oregon a little bit versus life in North Carolina? That must have been a pretty big transition for you.
Huge transition. And there are a lot of similarities. We have a coast and we have mountains. They're just on other sides.
Yeah.
Oregon is a really special place and it's a really beautiful place. And I was there at a time in my life when, relatively young, a lot of people there are there for grad school. So had a huge network of people there who just liked to do very similar things. Be outside, enjoy good food, good beer, and just really take in all Oregon has to offer. So I certainly miss it there a lot, but North Carolina was appealing to me for a number of reasons that Oregon was appealing. Feels like a very special place. People are very proud of being from here. There are beautiful beaches and mountains, and I just love being outside in nature. The weather, on the other hand, is completely different. I'm used to those cold, drizzly, rainy winters. And when it's gray sometimes here, it really feels right. But the humidity here is something that I need to get used to. And certainly Oregon is humid, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. We have the heat and the humidity here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all, I've always said it's all about kind of where you came from and how you acclimated to things. So I'm originally from New England. So moving from New England to here in the mountains of North Carolina, I hated the heat and humidity. But people that live in Raleigh and Charlotte and Atlanta will remind me, okay, it's not that bad. you know.
Yeah, when I hear you complaining about the heat, it's always a little bit hotter in Raleigh.
Yes, it's always a few degrees hotter and a few degrees, you know, more humid. So absolutely. So you brought up the weather of North Carolina. So that's actually a really interesting thing about the state is that we have all different kinds of weather. We have snowstorms in the mountains, we have heat events in the summer, and we've got, you know, hurricanes out on the coast. And then kind of from a climate perspective, there's a lot of different challenges. There's, you know, there's drought, there's, you know, long-lasting heat waves, and, you know, the science is showing that they're lasting longer and getting warmer, especially at overnight. So from a climatologist perspective, being the director of the whole institute, it's just interesting. Like, how do you tailor your message to people in Nag's Head versus people in Asheville?
Well, climate and weather touch everything and everybody. So we need this to be very local for people to grasp onto it. So when I'm in Nag's Head, I'm not so much talking about some of the mountain impacts, although they do want to hear about those, and vice versa, when I'm up here, not talking about tidal flooding as much. But that being said, you know, North Carolina is one state and people are interested in what's happening across the state, but I'm certainly not showing pictures of polar bears floating on ice to folks here. We need to make this issue very local and mm-hmm. very personal. Mm-hmm. And really, I mean, we are at the whim of what people are asking and what people want. So if somebody funds us to do a project, it's usually based on some sort of need that they have to better understand how precipitation will impact transportation infrastructure, for instance, or if you're a farmer growing a certain crop, what sort of pests and diseases are you prone to face in a warmer climate? Mm-hmm. And then the public has all sorts of questions to you. What does this mean for me?
Yeah, it's like the why should I care mentality. And I think it is important to have those, you know, kitchen table issues where, you know, polar bears, you know, they're far away, but there's issues happening here. A colleague of mine once said, and this is a quote that I've lived by a lot recently, is that no one in Iowa cares about sea level rise. And it's kind of like, okay, that makes sense because there's, you know, Iowa's a landlocked state, but I mean, you've got to make it more relatable to that person, like talk about drought or agriculture or things like that. And it's just, North Carolina is very interesting because you get both of that, right? You know, you get sea level rise issues out on the coast versus, you know, here we don't necessarily care about that, but, you know, we've got drought and wildfires. You know, we had a really bad wildfire a couple of years ago, and, you know, the drought's not doing, you know, it's a little iffy these days right now, but yeah, so it's just really interesting. So you've been here in North Carolina for 4 months.
Yes.
So far. We are recording this on Friday, November 8th, just for context, of 2019. In your four-month tenure so far, what is one of the biggest challenges you've faced so far?
I knew Oregon very well. I had a very large network of collaborators. I knew the university. I knew the state inside and out. And all of that knowledge isn't lost, but it's not necessarily useful here. So learning a brand new university, building my own new network, figuring out who does what and where to go, that's been a bit of a challenge. You know, I like to hit the ground running, and I think I have, but everything's moving just a little bit more slowly than I'd like. And I think another challenge is that the state climatologist needs to be an expert in the state they're living in, but that also means talking to folks. It means getting out and listening to their concerns and listening to what they care about. And that means I got to be on the road and traveling. So you heard me complaining that I was tired earlier. It's a lot of time away from home and traveling and driving and just trying to be out there. So it can be pretty exhausting.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we appreciate you coming to Asheville and talking for, I mean, two straight days, and then just and you're still traveling and such. But there seems to be a lot of good things coming down the pipeline for North Carolina, especially with Governor Cooper's Executive Order 80. So for those that don't know, like what is that, and what is your role in that?
So Executive Order 80 was issued by Governor Cooper last year that mandated the state agencies to think about climate change. That's resiliency and mitigation. So I'm working with folks in your institute to help produce the North Carolina Climate Assessment, which will help inform the risk and resilience plans that your institute is also heading up. part of the conversations that I've been having over the past few days is how can we get the State Climate Office more involved in that? And if we're thinking about resiliency planning, it's not just a report, but building capacity. And by building capacity, what institutions, what people do we have available to help the state agencies grapple with climate change? So we're looking forward to being more involved in that conversation. We are a resource for the state. We do focus on climate. And this is also my particular background, working with state agencies on thinking about climate change. So it's very near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, you said, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said that you've done 4 of these in Oregon. Is that correct, or is that something different?
We did 4 impacts assessments in Oregon, and they're legislatively mandated. I'm running out of words.
Okay, so this will be a big thing for North Carolina. Is there a deadline, or is it? I'm just more curious at this point. Is it?
There's a deadline of March for the individual risk and resilience plans, but the climate science assessment will be coming out in December, so very soon.
Okay, excellent. So
Tom's nodding because he knows what's up.
He does a lot of great work with the group that we call the Technical Support Union. They help do a lot of stuff for reports like this and the National Climate Assessment, so absolute shout out to them for the awesome work they do. I want to pivot a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about social media, because social media can be positive and negative, and sometimes at the same time. I find it very useful because it helps, you know, connect with people in the field. You know, there's so many people that I've come to know and collaborate with, including yourself, because I don't know about you, but it felt weird this week because, you know, we've known each other on Twitter for some time, but like this is the first time we actually met in person. Like, so for me, it's like, do I know you? Do I not know you? It just seems really weird. Like, do you ever have that experience?
I do. And sometimes I forget if I actually have met them because I know them on social media. And I think part of the reason that this visit happened so soon is because I did know you were up here and that your group would be great to collaborate with. So I already had that connection established. So yeah, there are certainly some benefits to social media.
Yeah, and the conversations that, you know, people can have on social media can, especially in the weather and climate society, I mean, they can vary greatly. I mean, you could talk about, you know, the European model versus the American model. You can talk about, you know, is a hot dog a sandwich or not? And you can talk about climate stuff. You can talk about maps. You know, what is the first day of climatological fall? I mean, you can get some really great and interesting conversations that come with that. So that leads me to my next question, and I think you know where this is going, because this is a conversation that we've sort of had at one point. So Raleigh has a lot of great things out there, and there a few months ago, I guess, they had a grocery store opened, and it was called Wegmans. Now, Wegmans, I believe, is based in Syracuse?
Rochester,
okay, so somewhere in New York. So I'm a person that, you know, I do love grocery stores and such. I love, obviously, we have to go there to get our stuff. But I'm actually going to be in Raleigh next week. And my friend lives in Cary, which is on the west side of Raleigh. And to my knowledge, Wegmans is on, if you put it on a map, it's on like the northeast side of Raleigh. So I would have to travel a very long way to go to a grocery store. So my question for you is, why Wegmans?
Number one, that's not long at all. number two, Wegmans is just a fantastic place. And for folks like myself who grew up in Western New York, this was a grocery store that we knew. So it's very familiar. And they got out ahead of Whole Foods and all the other grocery stores with the hot bar and the prepared foods. And that was really special. They treat their employees well, so it's reflected in your experience. I've never had a bad experience with a Wegmans employee. In fact, my brother and sister-in-law pick on me because whenever I'm at the Wegmans near them in Rochester, I always seem to have a very weird interaction with the staff where I do something weird and it flusters them, but they're always very polite through it. And their store brand is excellent. And here in Raleigh, they carry New York foods. I mean, I love it. I'm so glad they're here. I didn't wait in line on the first day with 3,000 people to go. But I don't know. It's just an experience you really have to see it for yourself.
Yeah, we were just talking today about they just opened up Popeyes here, and it was like lines out the door, and how it can be like almost like a cult following. So,
and they have that new chicken sandwich.
So I've heard. Neither Wegmans nor Popeyes are paid sponsors for this podcast. This was just kind of the result of a social media argument, I guess you would say about this.
It wasn't even an argument. It was, I think, more joshing around. I don't know that I've ever said joshing around.
Joshing around. Wow, that might be a first for a podcast. So, yeah, I do, like a lot of people know, I do just like talking for the sake of talking, which is why we're doing this podcast anyway. So I just love talking. Okay, you may have convinced me. I might make the trek.
Now I'm kind of worried, though, that you go there and you're like, eh.
You said that. Well, I will say I have been to one before. I've been to one in Massachusetts.
Okay.
So, and I kind of walked around and I was like, okay, I get it. Hot bar, cool. You know, it's a grocery store. So I might venture out next week and see if I change my mind.
I mean, I think I just really like grocery stores. So I live in downtown Raleigh, which is kind of a food desert. But most recently, the food co-op opened nearby me. And I've been waiting for that for so long. It's so nice to pop across the street and pick up dinner ingredients. I like the European model of grocery shopping, just getting a little bit of things, whatever I'm in the mood for. And I don't know, things like Instacart, I don't need that because I want to go through the experience. I think it's very cathartic to be in a grocery store.
In your time here in Nashville, have you walked around to any of the grocery stores or co-ops that are downtown?
No, because ours are better.
Oh, shots fired. Okay. Okay. All right. There's no other way to segue out of that, so we're just gonna move on to something else. What is, you know, you're the state climatologist. You speak to a lot of people. You know, talk about different issues. What do you hope is their one takeaway? Like, what is one thing that you wish the public understood more?
That I don't have any political power. That I am providing science, and by I mean our office, to help inform decision making. And I can't change policy. I can, as a person who lives in the state of North Carolina, vote, and I certainly do. But as the state climatologist, I'm not involved in that at all. And people get really frustrated that I am not doing enough about climate change. And trust me, I'm not the person you need to be mad at about that. And I feel the same. I would love for us to be doing more on climate change. But that the state climate office has this very just specific role, and I don't get to pass laws.
Yeah, I think we already referenced social media and Twitter, but I think it was Kate Marvel the other day who said something where it's like being a climate scientist is like being a plumber being asked to build a house. It's like, well, you're good at one aspect, but you've got to surround yourself with a lot of good people to help with that.
Yeah, and policy is rarely one thing only. So many different factors are going into decisions, and I'm talking about both big P policy laws and little P policy decisions that people are making to manage certain resources. And I think it's short-sighted if people think climate's the only thing going into that, because it's not true.
Okay, so as we're winding this down, we're going to wrap this up in a little bit. So one of the questions we want to ask people is, you know, we're scientists by trade, but we're always curious about something. You know, there's a scientific method. We're curious about something and we go investigate it. So right now, today, what are you curious about? It doesn't have to be science related. It could be about, you know, maybe you're curious about what's coming up this weekend or anything, but what piques your curiosity right now?
So I think there are two ways I'm going to answer this. I very much like food. I just went on this very animated rant about grocery stores, so that's obvious. And I love trying new places. I love trying the local cuisine when I'm in certain towns. You only gave me 15 minutes for lunch today, so wasn't able to do that in Asheville, but I've had some of the restaurants here. And I think I just love reading Bon Appetit. I love following them on Instagram and kind of thinking through this foodie world. I don't love the word foodie, but learning about new restaurants and new recipes is really fun and interesting for me. And now that I'm done with my PhD, I have more time on my hands to tackle big recipes on the weekend. And then I love just learning about places. So whenever I'm driving somewhere and I see an interesting town or an interesting building, I file it away. And once I'm off the road, I pull up Wikipedia and start to learn more about why that building's there or why it's historical or why this highway is called X, Y, and Z. And then I can go down a Wikipedia rabbit hole just learning about places and how they came to be. So I think that's one of the reasons being a state climatologist is appealing, is because I get to learn so much about this place, North Carolina, and that's what I'm going to be doing anyway, so might as well get paid for it.
Did you know you have a Wikipedia page?
I do.
Yes. I just happened to search for something this morning and it came up.
Oh, so, boy.
It seemed pretty good. I don't know who wrote it, but yeah, that was just kind of an FYI.
Whew.
You're on the internet. Congratulations. So you're on Twitter and Wikipedia.
So. Wild.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for coming. I know you're driving back to Raleigh tonight, so just finishing your 1,000-mile-plus trip. So I hope you come back and, you know, feel the food culture that we do have in here. We do have grocery stores that aren't Wegmans, so feel free to, you know, check them out, you know, next time you come. But again, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I'm so glad that I'm guest number one. So you better air this first.
Okay, we'll make sure.
Don't put Brian in front of me.
Okay. He doesn't even know he's going to do this. He just knows. So where can people find you?
They can find me at climate.ncsu.edu. That's the State Climate Office website. There's a great blog there. You can find me on Twitter at Kathy, K-A-T-H-I-E, D-E-L-L-O, Kathy Dello. And then my other social media is private. I need to carve out some space for myself.
Of course. Absolutely. Well, again, thank you for joining us today. That concludes today's episode. Thank you all for listening. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast through your favorite streaming service. Thanks again to The Collider for hosting us today. Be sure to check them out at www.thecollider.org. Again, thanks to Tom for helping with the podcast and sound stuff here today. My name is Jared Rennie. You can follow me at JJ Rennie on Twitter to keep up to date on future episodes and other cool STEM stuff. I hope you all have a wonderful day and stay curious out there.